there, gamers. Welcome to another episode of the Xbox Wrap-Up Podcast, your news podcast. My name is Captain Logan, or just Logan, depending on how you know me. We're going to be talking about a ton of stuff this week, and it wouldn't be a week of gaming industry news if we didn't talk about another acquisition. It seems like the first half of this year has been nothing but acquisition after acquisition, and this is no different. So we're going to be talking about Embracer Group buying a bunch of studios from Square Enix, what that means for the industry, what that means for Square Enix. We're going to be talking about Reggie Fils-Aimé, former COO and president of Nintendo of America, published his own autobiography. There's some interesting insights about that that we'll be diving into. I have yet to read it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm probably going to pick it up on Audible because that's how I like to read books, but I kind of want a physical copy too. We're also going to be talking about Prince of Persia, the Sands of Time remake. Zelda Ocarina of Time is in the news. We're going to be talking about Xbox news. There's a bunch of news to go over with the May Xbox update for your app, the reviews for Trek to Yokai. You can now play Fortnite on iOS devices. We're going to be talking about how that's possible. And there's a brand new Xbox wireless controller that is a beautiful deep pink. So we're going to be talking about that, my thoughts on it. A whole bunch of stuff to go over this episode. I can't believe that. I thought it was going to be a slow week, I'm not going to lie. And we got a lot to cover. So if you missed out on the news this week, don't worry. I've got you covered. It's the end of the month, or the end of the week. It's the beginning of a month. It's the end of the week. And I've got all the news here for you. So let's get into it. I feel like the big news this week is the big story about Embracer Group and them acquiring three studios from Square Enix. Now, if you hadn't heard about this, this was early. I was actually up. It was early on a Monday morning that we heard about this, and we found out that Embracer Group ended up purchasing three studios from Square Enix. This deal was for the tune of $300 million, and the studios that they were able to pick up were Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, and Square Enix Montreal Studios. Now, if you're not familiar with the studios themselves, I don't blame you to try and keep track of this, but if you do, then you already have an idea of what kind of excitement this is having for a lot of gamers, because if you've been keeping up with the news, or you may not have heard, Square Enix themselves, a Japan-based publisher, has had these American studios and European studios for a while, and they haven't really, or North American, I should say, not American, but North American, and they haven't really performed the way that they expected. They've always been kind of touted as falling below the expectation of what their sales should have been. Part of this is in due to the Avengers game, the game that came out with a really good single player, but was trying to be another Anthem / Destiny 2, and it just didn't do what people were hoping for. And I think a lot of that had to do with the similarity that the game had with the kind of stunt double look of the Marvelous Avengers. You know, everyone is so used to the Marvel film, the MCU Avengers, and to see someone that is kind of like it, but not quite, but definitely inspiration from that as opposed to the comics was really kind of, you know, weird for people. So when Guardians of the Galaxy, which was made by Crystal Dynamics, was being shown off, same situation. They looked at it and they're like, yeah, you know what? It's Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm used to the MCU. These look like they're more from the comics, so we'll see. Turns out that the Guardians of the Galaxy game was actually a really good game. I've really enjoyed it. I know a bunch of people that have really enjoyed it, and it's definitely worth playing, especially if you have Game Pass Ultimate. I believe it's still on there right now. You can actually play that for free. And I think Avengers is on there as well, too. And you can go through the single player there, although I will warn you, it is a hefty download. So if you can play that through cloud streaming, it may be actually less data. So with these studios kind of underperforming in the eyes of Square Enix, Square Enix has been looking to kind of cut off some of their North American studios and kind of seem like they're focusing more on their Japan studios and efforts that they're going on there. So when Embracer Group offered to purchase them, they did so for $300 million, which, if we're being honest, is a really good deal, especially given how much money has been thrown around for so many other studios and publishers recently. And you may be wondering, well, who is Embracer Group? Embracer Group seems like something you may have heard of. You may know everything about them, and that's great. But for a lot of folks, many of us were having to kind of do some research. So let's go to the first article that I wanted to dive into. This is coming to us from Jordan over at IGN. Thank you, Jordan, for writing this up. Put a really nice spin on this to kind of break down like some of the more important things that you want to know about Embracer Group. They are a Swedish holding company that is a company that doesn't produce goods or services itself, and rather it owns other companies that do. In the case of Embracer, it owns 10 such companies, THQ Nordic, Coach Media, Coffee Stain, Amplifier Game Invest, Saber Interactive, which if you don't remember, Saber Interactive is actually the studio that was working on the port for Witcher 3, which was eventually moved to internal studios, Deca Games, Gearbox Entertainment, Borderlands, if you don't remember, Easy Brain, Asmodee, and Dark Horse. Not Dark Horse the comics, I don't think, though. And all 10 of those companies operate a varying number of businesses and or studios, all of which fall underneath the Embracer Group umbrella. Hopefully that kind of makes sense. To kind of talk a little bit about the history of them, we'll talk about some of the notable acquisitions by Embracer Group, thanks to this article. So let's kind of talk about one of the first ones, which was 2013. Embracer Group made its first major acquisition by buying Darksiders, Red Faction 2, MX versus ATV, and Destroy All Humans, and other IPs for $4.9 million from the bankrupt THQ and Nordic Games. Looks like in 2017, they purchased another developer called Black Forest Games and its IPs, like Gia Sisters, Eldorado, and Rogue Stormers. Less interesting as far as like what you may be aware of, but they're working on they were the ones that were working on the remake for Destroy All Humans 2. They eventually made another purchase or acquisition in 2017, which ended up being Experiment 101, which turned out Biomutant. Which a lot of people like, a lot of people don't like. It's kind of a mid-range game. So in 2018, they picked up Coach Media and Deep Silver for $150 million. They're the ones that are now working on Dead Island 2, Homefront the Revolution, Chorus, which is an exclusive. I thought it might have been an exclusive, but they're also working on Volition. They have Volition now. They're working on Saints Row and Red Faction. And they also have the IPs for Time Splitters and Kingdoms of Amalur, which recently had a remake as well. The Re-Reckoning. And then Embracer Group also acquired Coffee Stain for $34.7 million, which they're the ones that ended up getting them the IPs for Goat Simulator and Satisfactory. They're now working with those to kind of create and publish the PC hit Valheim, which is, I think, on sale right now for $15. I was thinking about picking that up. Though the developer Iron Gate Studios still kind of remains independent, they are publishing that game for them. Let's see, what else? They also have Bugbear Entertainment, which came out with Wreckfest. Not amazing, but, you know, still notable. And then in 2019, they ended up purchasing Warhorse Studios for $37.5 million. And they're the ones that came out with the immersive RPG Kingdom Come Deliverance. They're now working on other games with Saber Interactive and kind of keeping that going. Looks like the next one came into its next purchase of Milestone in 2019 for $50 million, where they ended up having the developer who most recently put out the Hot Wheels Unleashed game in 2021. Taking a look at some of the other ones, let's see if I can find Little Nightmares developer was a studio that was acquired for $10.5 million. Let's see, where else? Saber Interactive became the fifth operating group to be purchased for $150 million. They are the ones that actually did the Switch port for The Witcher 3 and... they're now working on Evil Dead, the game, and Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2, which I'm actually really excited for because I love that. Let's see. Let's see. Embracer acquired developer 4A Games, a proprietary game engine, and the Metro IP, like Metro Exodus, by the way, for $36 million. And then let's see where else. Any other interesting ones? They got Zen Studios, which if you don't know Zen Studios, they make the Pinball FX games, which are great. They also got the developer Purple Lamp Studios, who did SpongeBob SquarePants, SquarePants Bikini, or Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated. That is a name, man. Then it looks like in 2021 was really kind of the biggest purchase that they had made, where they had acquired Borderlands developer Gearbox for $363 million upfront, with incentives that could make the deal worth as much as $1.3 billion. And then Gearbox was made Embracer's seventh operating group under its acquisition. Regarding Borderlands, 2K will still publish all of the known and planned games in the series, though the IPs are owned by Gearbox / Embracer, which is kind of interesting. Then you've got Embracer announcing its $100 million acquisition of developer / publisher Aspyr Media in February 2021, who are porting the game Knights of the Old Republic. They are the ones that are remaking that. And that deal looks like it could be worth, or end up being worth, as much as $450 million when all is said and done. And then it looks like 2 years after acquiring Deep Rock Galactic's publisher Coffee Stain, Embracer Group purchased the game's developer Ghost Ship Games. Ghost Ship was one of the eighth acquisitions as of August 2021. Which, if you haven't played Deep Rock Galactic, that's an amazing game. It's a really fun game. Love diving down into there. And it looks like they also have Cryptic Studios, which was a purchase in December of 2021 for $125 million. And they are best known for Star Trek Online and Neverwinter Nights. Or not Neverwinter, Neverwinter Nights, just Neverwinter. One of the D&D MMORPGs. It's been just kind of going around forever. This latest one is kind of the one that really set the internet on fire. This is the one that really kind of made people stand up and take attention, because for a long time, a lot of folks have felt like Square Enix have been unfair to Crystal Dynamics, makers of Tomb Raider, and are currently helping out with Perfect Dark for Xbox. Eidos Montreal and Square Enix Montreal, who are the makers and owners of IP for Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, Legacy of Kain, and Thief. They got all of those IPs, as well as a whole bunch more. We already know that Crystal Dynamics is helping with Perfect Dark, but they are also making a new Tomb Raider game using Unreal Engine 5, as a recent announcement from the Unreal Engine 5 event that went just not too long ago. And we're really kind of waiting to see what those other studios are going to do. But we do know that the Hitman developer does have the rights to be able to use the James Bond IP for an upcoming game as well, too. So we know that Square Enix basically just gave up the next Bond game, the next Tomb Raider game, and the next Perfect Dark game for sure for $300 million, which seems insane because they didn't even keep the IPs. And a lot of people might be wondering kind of what's going on with this. Why would Square do this? Well, Square doesn't seem to be really interested in making games, especially games made from Western developers, or excuse me, Eastern developers. I guess, I don't know, we consider ourselves Western, but technically Asia is more West than we are. So I guess it's cutting it off based on the meridian line thingy that's in the middle of the ocean between us. But regardless, Square Enix looks like they want to invest in blockchain, AI, and cloud with the $300 million that they're getting for these three studios, which, considering the NFT market just dropped value significantly recently, it seems really silly that blockchain, AI, and cloud are the ways they want to go. Now, I don't blame them for wanting to go with AI, because AI can do a lot. You can actually find some videos out there of people who were able to take Grand Theft Auto 5, scan in enough images, record enough video, and actually put that into an AI-generated algorithm. And the game, or the algorithm itself, the AI algorithm, was actually able to generate roads and cars and environments just based off of the actual videos. It never had any programming on how to make the world. It had no programming on how to drive the cars. It was all based off of the video that was shot, the recordings from GTA 5 that it gave to, that it was given. And based off of that, it was able to make a game. So The idea of AI right now being able to have enough data to generate scenes from a game is still a ways off, but it is definitely something people are working on. So I can understand why they want to invest in AI. And if you're going to invest in AI, the cloud is a great way to kind of do that, because you're utilizing cloud infrastructure to deliver games that you don't necessarily need to have sold in stores. You can sell them digitally, support the servers, and then when the servers are there, they are going to be the thing that kind of adds the games to your library, plays the games, streams them, all the stuff that kind of Game Pass Ultimate is offering through xCloud. The one that really kind of sticks a thorn in everyone's paw is blockchain. And blockchain, if you guys know, NFTs are based off of blockchain technology. Blockchain technology itself isn't a bad thing, but NFTs, by selling artwork or goods through blockchain technology, is a scam for intents purposes. There's plenty of ways that you can have digital goods that you can use. There's no guarantee anywhere that anything that's purchased as a non-fungible token, as a digital asset, will be useful in the future when those servers go down. So right now it's a bunch of people trying to sell people on the idea of something that is just not promised. You cannot promise it. It's not like having a physical piece of paper that you can store somewhere safe and then come back in 50 years and pick up that same piece of paper and look at it and have the same data on there. It's just not, there's no way to guarantee you that. And if you don't believe me, do me a favor, try and figure out like where the heck your photos are from like 2000 or before then, because man, like unless you've got photo albums and stuff like that, there's no way you're going to find any early digital photos. I can't find anything before like, oh, I don't know, 2003. So if you guys like the digital future is vast, infinite, and amazing, but blockchain and NFTs are a real big scam right now. So I really don't understand why Square Enix is doing this, unless they are trying to get themselves bought, because right now blockchain, AI, and cloud are kind of like the big words that you want to use when you're looking for angel investors or people who are looking to buy you. So it could be that the people running Square Enix right now are trying to get out of the game. They realize that it may be going down, and they're looking for any way to sell off any of its property. And definitely a lot of news pundits out there have been saying that the Square Enix portfolio right now, after these three studios have been moved over to Embracer Group, are looking pretty tasty. They don't look like there's a whole lot there that you have to worry about. It's all kind of nice, tight, it's clean, and they could probably sell off to someone else, which begs a lot of PlayStation fans the question of why doesn't Sony purchase Square Enix? Now, they are still going through the regulation for the Bungie acquisition, where they're hoping that Bungie will be able to take its information and help translate that to PlayStation games to be better kind of retrofit some of their IPs or potentially with the future of their IPs include things like season passes, different ways to monetize beyond just the $70 that they're currently charging. And I don't blame them for that, because right now, Bungie is doing the best as far as it goes with any kind of like game service thing. They kind of wrote the book on it, essentially. So while Sony is in the midst of that, it would be great to see Sony kind of purchase that, although it would be kind of like a bittersweet thing, because it would be nice to see Square kind of go back with Sony, who they've been, you know, supporting for a very long time and still do. They're still Sony has been paying them a lot of money to keep Final Fantasy games that are current, like new Final Fantasy games off of Xbox and Nintendo right now. So they've already got a good history, and it would not surprise me if Square was a lot more tangible now that they have those three studios at Embracer's taking off of them to be purchased by a company like Sony. Now, what that would mean for Xbox fans is that if they did purchase Square Enix, there's a good chance that a lot of that IP from Final Fantasy and what's some of the other ones? I can't think of some of the other ones that's bugging me right now. But for sure, like Final Fantasy 14, Final Fantasy 15, Final Fantasy 16, whatever that ends up being, those games are probably never going to come to Xbox. And it feels like that's kind of the case already. So not a lot of Xbox fans are really expecting that. So I don't know that that would be a huge loss for Xbox fans. It would be a bummer for the industry for sure, but that always happens anytime there's an acquisition by one of the manufacturers of the consoles. You just have to expect that. At some point, you're probably going to have to pick up one of each system, which is not a bad thing because at least it gives you a little bit of diversity. You get to taste a little bit of what's going on across the pond, and you don't really feel like you're missing out on any of the exclusives. I know I would hate to lose out on any of the exclusives for Sony because I think they do a great job with them, but I would never want to give up the community and the multiplayer that I get from Xbox because it's better than anything else I've seen on Sony's side of it. So some of the things that have been coming up as a result of the purchase with Embracer is their commitment to bringing some of their fabled IP, now that they own that, to be able to have new installments. So the next Tomb Raider's confirmed. They're looking to make another Deus Ex game, which is amazing because I really think the Deus Ex franchise is undervalued right now. Legacy of Kain. I love the Legacy of Kain games, mostly Soul Reaver, though. I would love to have that come back. I would love to have those re-released to be able to go through them. I would love for them to have a remake. I think Saber could do a good job with that. Thief, I never got into. Project Snowblind, I never got into. Soul Reaver, I mentioned. Blood Omen was the precursor to Legacy of Kain. Gex, an odd one that a lot of people have been asking for now. As a result, they are hoping that there's a Gex 4 that they could make. And then Whiplash. Many of the things that they could do with these are things that we probably won't see in probably at least the next 10 years. Like, I would be surprised if the games that they are making right now are due out probably within the next 3 to 4 years at the earliest, then there's a good chance that any of these new games based off of IP that has been dormant for a long time, unless they were given to another studio, we're probably not going to see anything at least for another 6 to 7 years. And at that point, we may be looking at the launch games for the next gen consoles, depending on how long this game, how long this generation goes on. A lot of people saying that because of the shortages, that this may be a longer console generation, which wouldn't surprise me. Although I'm very surprised that the most people still have a lot of trouble being able to get these consoles. I know personally, I just had to order an antenna board for my Xbox Series X because I've been having issues with my party chat cutting out. Like, whatever headset I'm using, the audio just ends up cutting out and it doesn't really make sense. And I've contacted Microsoft about that. They haven't recognized that as an issue, regardless of who I talk to, even though I know that this is something that has been happening with other people. But I'm going to have to tear open my Xbox soon and try and replace that part and see if that fixes it, because I am not sending my launch Xbox to Microsoft to spend $200 for them to do something that I can do for $30 and some time. So I'm really excited for the prospect of what Embracer Group is doing. The games industry is an interesting one. There were a lot of people that were kind of pointing at this and being excited for this compared to when Microsoft announced that they were acquiring Activision Blizzard King. And I think a lot of this has to do with how people feel about Microsoft versus how people feel about Embracer Group. This was them purchasing three studios versus an entire publisher, which is a little bit different. It's not necessarily the same exact example, but there was definitely a lot of people who will kind of go against Xbox just because it's not the console that they have right now. So whenever they see things like Activision getting purchased by Microsoft, they start to fear for their Call of Duties, which, by the way, it's really kind of funny that that's happening, because I believe Microsoft is actually losing out on a deal that's going on right now. I think PlayStation Plus users are going to be getting a bunch of free stuff for Vanguard and Warzone this May. By the way, also, don't forget, May 11th, Godzilla and King Kong in Warzone. I want to see what this is. I downloaded Warzone the other day and started playing because I just want to get used to the gameplay, because I don't know what it's going to look like, but it's going to be freaking amazing. I'm kind of curious to hear from you all how you feel about this. For me, someone who hasn't played through the recent Tomb Raider games or the Deus Ex games, those are ones that I have on my bucket list. They're like games that I actually own that I just haven't played through. And I'm really curious to know how everyone feels about them. You know, did you like them? Is this something that was worth getting? Did Embracer Group get a good deal on this compared to you? I mean, $300 million is just a weird thing to be able to do, but you know, if we get more games like Guardians of the Galaxy, are you excited for that compared to Avengers?
You mind telling me what you're doing on that ship,
sir? Finishing this fight.
With that, let's dive into one topic that we got that is more of a delay than actual news. Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake was something that got announced, I want to say, a couple years ago at this point. And we've been waiting to kind of see what it looks like. The initial review came to some heavy criticism, and as a result, Ubisoft Mumbai Studio and I believe Pune, I have no clue. They were the ones that were actually working on this, and with it looking so rough, they decided to kind of push out the date and start working on it some more, you know, kind of refine some of the animations. This is one where they actually got the original voice actors to come back and re-record their lines so that they could have higher quality voice or audio for the game, which is amazing that they were able to do this. But a lot of people were left feeling like it did not quite hold up to what we expect out of a remake, especially when you look at games like Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3, some of the best remakes that I think anyone has seen, and would like that to be kind of the gold standard for games when they come out as a remake. So we got a tweet from the Prince of Persia Twitter account, which is surprising that they managed to get Prince of Persia. Very congratulations on that. They're following four people and have 12K, not 27K. But they put up an update, which is one of those images where it just has a bunch of text because it's obviously too much data for or too many characters to kind of round it out. And they said, "Hello, Prince of Persia fans. The development of Prince of Persia, the Sands of Time remake, will now be led by Ubisoft Montreal, the very birthplace of the epic Sands of Time trilogy. This decision is an important step, and the team, building upon the work achieved by Ubisoft Pune, and Ubisoft Mumbai, will now take the time they need to regroup on the scope of the game to deliver you the best experience for this remake on an all-time classic when it's ready. We want to thank you all for your continuous support and patience throughout the development. Rest assured that we will update you on the progress in a future update." So right now, I have no clue what the hell they're talking about, where they need to regroup on the scope of the game to deliver. You already have the scope. It's the original game. All you have to do is just remake the original game. Now, if you're not sure what the scope is make the game and then put the game out. You don't have to add anything. You just have to make it look good and play well. Like, bring up the standards for the controls, make the graphics that, you know, look high res, you know, do the due diligence of just making it look good. Outside of that, people will be fine playing that. Like, you don't have to go in and add anything beyond the original game itself. Just make the original game with updated graphics. I'm glad that Ubisoft Montreal is going to be doing this, but when they say that it's going to be the birthplace or made by the birthplace of the Sands of Time trilogy, that's great. I don't think everyone that was working on Sands of Time back when it first came out are still at Ubisoft Montreal. We're talking decades at this point when that game came out. So don't expect this to be like the same people making it. It's just going to be from the same studio that is still alive or still there working on it. We don't really know why this was the case. We don't know if this has any reasons that are causing issues for them to be able to continue development, whereas Montreal, as far as I know, hasn't really had too many issues. I could be wrong about that. I don't really keep up with the world news. But I'm glad that they're at least kind of still working on that. We recently heard from the, I can't remember which Ubisoft studio it is, but the Ubisoft studio that has been having their head down for the Skull and Bones game. If you're not familiar with the Skull and Bones game, this was one that was announced alongside Sea of Thieves. And this is one where basically there was a video that was leaked out. They haven't really said that it is for sure the thing that people that it is what it is, but for all intents and purposes, they definitely just had their entire like launch video released early. And they put out a couple trailers, but this is the Sea of Thieves competitor that was supposed to come out alongside Sea of Thieves back in like 2018. It went quiet for a very, very long time. And it wasn't until 2020 that I think we had heard that there were still some things going on with that. They were doing a lot of work to kind of like rebalance the game and take a look at what was actually going on for the main beefy part of the game. And I think a lot of that was the influence of Sea of Thieves. They saw exactly what Sea of Thieves was doing. They saw a lot of the criticisms with Sea of Thieves and decided to kind of like go silent and kind of rehash what they wanted this game to be. If you're not familiar, it's very similar to the kind of sailing around from Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which is a very, very piratey game. And this looks to just kind of be nothing but that. Originally, this was set up to be a PvP game. We don't know if they're going to be adding any story campaign to kind of flush out the rest of the world to kind of explain what's going on, or if they're just going to leave this as a PvP game. But with things like the co-director leaving the studio for a while after 15 years of service, it's hard to know like if this is going to be something that's really going to pan out for them. It looks cool. It looks like it's going to be interesting, but it's going to be one of those situations where this game may have just been in development hell for too long for them to really keep kind of the essence, drive, or core behind what they were hoping this was going to be. And I think a lot of that is kind of coming from the fact that there have been some major issues going on with Ubisoft in general. In fact, I think they are looking for angel investors to help kind of infuse their studios with cash because right now things are not looking good for them. And it could be one of those situations where they're trying to protect themselves from like a hostile takeover, which really begs to question some of the things that people have been asking, which is Microsoft is very akin to situations where they can pick up studios that are in trouble, buy cheap, build it up, and then start releasing content as a result, and then put that content on Game Pass. So you're adding value and pushing more of that subscription model. It's a very good system. Doesn't always yield good results, but it is definitely a good system for what they want, which is people subscribe to Game Pass. And it's hard to pass up a 7 out of 10 game for the cost of Game Pass every month compared to having to wait for those 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 games once every, 3 to 6 months for a first party studio. So with Prince of Persia and with Skull and Bones, it's going to be very interesting to see like how these games end up being, because I don't foresee these turning out as well as people are expecting, just because they are going through development hell right now. Same thing with Everwild. It feels kind of weird. There's just a lot of stuff kind of up in the air, but I'm going long on this. So let's move on to some of the other things. Two small things. that I wanted to touch on is Nintendo-based. Reggie Fils-Aimé, who was the former president and CEO of Nintendo America, released his autobiography. Again, I haven't read it. This is one of those things where I will defer to other people who've had time. I hadn't heard about this until today. I was actually kind of surprised, but he released a book that is based on his time from Nintendo and also kind of talks a lot about just like his desire for people to feed off of his kind of success. He wants people to believe in themselves and is trying to write something that feels very much like his voice. So you'll get a lot of anecdotes from his time at Nintendo as well as before, and some feelings on some of the things that were going on in Nintendo that he had to deal with, as well as, like, you know, how he felt when Iwata had hired him. There's a lot of stuff in there about self-belief and self-fulfilling strategy, which I also believe in as well too. But a lot of things kind of going into some of his situations in life that really kind of made him who he is from this perspective. And I'm looking forward to reading this. I really, really am. And listening to people talk about how much they liked it and some of the takeaways that they got from it is really awesome, because he did it. He made himself one of the most important figures in gaming history. And as a result, a lot of people are interested in what he has to say. And this is probably going to be the best opportunity for us to really actually see what that is in hindsight. The other thing that I wanted to bring up actually pertains to Nintendo's Zelda Ocarina of Time, which for me is kind of where a lot of gaming really kind of like stood out. Like I absolutely loved Zelda Ocarina of Time, but I'm not going to get into that because I wanted to talk about the fact that this is something that is getting inducted into the video game or the World Video Game Hall of Fames alongside Ms. Pac-Man, Dance Dance Revolution, Sid Meier's Civilization, to name a few. This is something that is really just kind of amazing that it hasn't been in there already. But if you're ever in Rochester, New York, you can actually go to see the video games at the museum. These are going to be on permanent view at Strong's Museum on the second floor, according to the GameSpot article that I'm reading. And it's just kind of nice that this is something that's getting inducted to the Hall of Fame, because so many games have been in there before. I mean, Assassin's Creed made it in there before Zelda Ocarina of Time, which is insane. Candy Crush Saga made it in there. Minesweeper made it in there. NBA Jam was in there beforehand. Resident Evil was in there beforehand. And so many games like Rogue in Words with Friends have been in there that for whatever reason, like Ocarina of Time just was not in there, especially Dance Dance Revolution too. And you'd think Ms. Pac-Man would be in there from the get-go. A lot of this, I think, comes down to legal issues. There was an interesting story that came out as a result where Stone Cold Steve Austin, which if you don't know, was a WWE champion for wrestling, had declared that Breath of the Wild to be the best Zelda game, which is just kind of absolutely, it's so kind of crazy to even think of like that being a thing. I never thought Stone Cold Steve Austin was someone to play video games. It just didn't seem like it was his kind of thing. But yeah, really interesting stories that kind of came out of nowhere. But that's it as far as like the regular news. I think it's time we dive into the actual Xbox news. Boy, I tell you what, this one came out of nowhere. I saw a tweet that said that there was going to be big Xbox news in about 3 hours or later today, technically, and like 3 hours later, we got tweets from Xbox, and I'm going to be reading from the Xbox Wire on this one to talk about this. But Fortnite can now be played through Xbox Cloud Gaming for free. Now, you may be wondering, like, okay, well, Fortnite is for free. Like, nobody has to pay for Fortnite. Why is this any different? I have Xbox Cloud through Game Pass. I don't necessarily need that. You don't understand. It is free. You just have to have a Microsoft account and a device connected to the internet, and you can now play Fortnite. You may be wondering why this is a big deal. If you don't remember, or maybe you weren't around when this was going on, I don't even think that I was making the podcast when it all happened. But Epic and Xbox decided to pick a fight with Apple. And the reason for it was around the idea of how restrictive Apple was being with their store. Namely, Epic wanted to be able to charge people for V-Bucks, which are the currency in Fortnite, without having to go through the Apple iOS store, because Apple would take 30% cut from that transaction. They do that for all of their games. They do that for all of their transactions. Anything you purchase through Apple, Apple gets a 30% cut regardless of what company is publishing or producing that content. It's just one of the deals that is made as a result of putting your content on iOS stores. They control the garden. They charge an entry fee into that. That entry fee is 30%. So Epic was losing 30% of all of their revenue for Fortnite through iTunes or the Apple Store, the Apple iOS ecosystem. So they sued Apple, saying that it was a monopoly on that, which if you look at like Microsoft, Steam, Google, you could kind of say the same thing about them as well, too. But the difference is that some of these studios, Epic included, have tried to be more competitive in the market as far as the percentage that is taken during transactions. So like Epic and Microsoft are working to move it to, I believe, 15%, which would be half of what Apple is charging for every transaction. And as a result of the lawsuit, the thing that sparked it was that Apple told them that they can't do it. They can't put a microtransaction in Fortnite that goes directly to Epic and circumnavigates the purchase process through iOS, meaning that Apple wouldn't be getting or Epic would be getting 100% of the revenue, not the 70 that they normally would get if you purchase through the iOS store. And as a result, they got a warning, and then Apple decided to pull the game from their store. So for quite a while, actually, I wonder if I can actually find out when this was. Epic Apple lawsuit. Let me see if I can find out when this started. That's right. So this started in 2020. And this was something that, as a result, you could not play Fortnite on an iOS device, whether it was iPad or an iPhone or even through like the Mac store, I believe. You could not play Fortnite through those stores anymore. So one of the largest markets for mobile didn't have Fortnite. And there were a lot of people who were upset about this because they basically blamed Epic for starting a fight that, in all honesty, only Epic could actually win. And I believe there was a settlement. I don't remember what the history of it is. I think it may still be going on. But for all intents and purposes, so far, they've both been admitted for having faults in stuff. This was decided in September 10th, 2021, in which case both companies basically had to admit fault for things like Epic definitely broke TOS. Apple was being a little stingy with their shit. And as a result, you haven't been able to play Fortnite on an iOS device. So the news that came out today was that Xbox had worked with Epic. And what they had planned to do is make Fortnite available through browser-enabled devices for free in 26 countries that support xCloud gaming or Xbox Cloud Gaming. So it's not everyone, but in 26 different countries, you can now play Fortnite without having to subscribe to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate to get access to Xbox Cloud Gaming. And this is apparently the first step in bringing free-to-play titles to cloud gaming through Xbox. You may be wondering, well, what does this do for Xbox? Well, it gives players an opportunity to have an Xbox account to play one of the most popular games in the world. So if they're playing it and they like the experience, which based on a lot of the things that I was seeing recently, a lot of people are really enjoying the fact that xCloud is playing better than GeForce Now right now, which I believe was the alternative to playing Fortnite. But for all intents and purposes, if you wanted to play Fortnite, you had to stream it through a device, through the browser, basically, on iOS. You couldn't have a native version to be able to do that. xCloud or Xbox Cloud Gaming is offering it on iOS, on iPadOS, Android phone or tablet, and Windows PC as long as you have internet access. It is touch enabled as well as controller enabled, so you don't have to worry about if you're the type that likes to use the touch controls or pick up a controller and use it that way as well too. This is the first time that you've been able to play a game through Xbox Cloud Gaming without having to subscribe to Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. And the fact that it brings Fortnite back to iOS devices is basically a big middle fucking finger right up Apple's keister and says, hey, Tim Cook, I don't care how you feel about this. You can't stop people from going on their browser and restricting. I mean, they could. They could absolutely restrict where you can go on the browser. And you would then have to probably decide, like, If you want to continue having free access to the internet, you may want to consider moving to a different company, because if they're going to start restricting on where you can go on a browser, like, they already restrict you as far as the type of content that you can access through the App Store or through the iTunes movie and music store. Like, they've already been very restrictive on that. But if they go further and say that the browsers are no longer able to stream video games the way that they are, that feels like a step too far and would honestly push me to move to Android at this point, because I'm already not happy with the stuff that Apple's doing. But I'm so ingrained in the ecosystem that I'm really heavily considering whether or not my next device is going to be an Android, because I'll be 100% honest, man. Now that Apple has that Apple TV app, most of my stuff is available through there. And I never listen to anything that I've purchased in the past through Apple Music. Everything I listen to now is either on YouTube or Spotify. So if you've been hoping to play Fortnite, and this was kind of cool too. They did an update that brought in the Master Chief cosmetics, the Gears of War cosmetics, and they're still celebrating the Star Wars stuff, where you can get the Star Wars cosmetics for like Rey or the Stormtroopers. Finn, they've also got the Book of Boba Fett stuff in there. No Mandalorian that I saw, but you can definitely pick up pretty much all of the Star Wars stuff that's available from Fortnite right now, as well as the Gears of War and as well as the Halo stuff, as kind of a celebration of Fortnite being able to be back on iOS. Insane. Satya Nadella, the head of Microsoft, even tweeted this out. It was kind of crazy to see Satya Nadella basically be like, hey, Tim Cook, we're bringing Fortnite back to iOS devices and we don't give a fuck what you think about it. And so, yeah, if you want to do this, you just have to have a Microsoft account, which is free to get. You can go to xbox.com/play and you can see Fortnite right there being able to play without having to pay for anything. Now, obviously, data charges are going to apply for streaming data through your phone. That's all tied to your your phone service provider, I guess. But that's all on you. If you got Wi-Fi, you can do it at home with the Wi-Fi, but I tried it today. It works really well. It plays really well. I don't know if it was something that Epic was working with Microsoft specifically to make sure that it plays well, but I didn't notice any latency, any kind of artifacting, especially considering that I have that with other games on the service. Moving away from cloud gaming, let's talk about how you can play those games on your phone if you want with a brand new controller that just got announced. This week they announced a new Xbox Color controller. This is the Xbox Wireless controller, and this one is in a deep pink. Now, this is a really beautiful controller. If you're not familiar, think of the controllers that they recently came out in the first year that were the bright red and the blue, and then they came out with a yellow one more recently. This isn't going to be like Forza 5 or the Halo Master Chief kind of ones. Very simple, very kind of clean in look. You've got a black D-pad with black bumpers as well as triggers. The buttons on the face are going to be black with a deep pink lettering for the actual letters. The front shell is going to be a deep pink as well as the thumb pads. Then half of the back grips are going to be pink, and then the bottom half of the actual grips, and then the back shell and battery cover are all going to be white. This is something that is suggested MSRP of $65 in the United States. I will say The Xbox controller overall is my favorite layout. I love the asymmetrical grip or thumbsticks. I think that the controller is light. It feels good. If I had my choice, though, I would have to say that the PS5 controller is definitely a better controller as a stock included with the console. Adaptive triggers and haptic feedback really make a difference when playing. The built-in microphone and the speaker is really unique, and I think that's something that really kind of transforms the experience of actually playing. When I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima, I absolutely love hearing the little sword sheathing from the actual controller. I love having those little immersive details in there. The thing that I love about the Xbox controller, though, is that this thing is so universal for everything. I can use it with anything and feel comfortable with it as well. It's a great, great build. I think it's a great controller. I haven't had any issues with mine so far, and that's after almost 2 years worth of gameplay with it. It's not nearly as heavy as my Elite Series 2, which is the Halo Master Chief Edition, which is kind of like my main driver right now for my Xbox, just because I'm gotten so used to the back pedals that it feels weird. But I'll be 100% honest, man. I really miss having the share button. I think the dedicated share button is awesome. I think it's something that is sorely missed on the series controllers, the Elites. And I really hope that they come out with an Elite 3 that actually has a share button built in, or an update to the Series X and S controllers where it adds more haptics or just some of the features that the competitors are putting in there. Let's keep on the whole kind of theme that we got going on right now, where we're talking about playing mobile games, we're talking about playing with a controller. Let's talk about the latest announcement that is a personal story for me. This is one that is very near to me because I've got three friends of mine that have been building this game for the last few years, and man, I am so stoked that they got to announce it this week. May 3rd came out. Blizzard came out and announced a new video game that they have been working on for the last few years, for quite a while, to be honest, and it's called Warcraft Arclight Rumble. This is a mobile-only game, but it's going to be free to play with microtransactions that are not as egregious as something like Clash Royale. Something that I'm looking forward to with this is that instead of it being kind of your traditional Clash Royale game, where it's kind of like pitting armies against each other, this is going to be kind of like a PvP with some PvP and some co-op battle, all kind of like available to you. It is a tower offense game, which very similar to a tower defense game where you're dealing with waves of enemies. You are going to try and actually defeat the tower itself with your own waves of enemies, and puts the onus on you to kind of do this. The game looks fun. It's top down, but the cinematic for it, they did such a good job with it. It looks like a pinball machine. You get heroes, very similar to Warcraft 3, especially if you were familiar with Warcraft 3, you had champions, and the champions had special abilities, and you could give them different items. Same thing with these guys here. You can level them up, you can get better valued ones, and you can get different abilities for them. You can have PvE ones, you can have PvP ones, there's dungeons, there's raids, you can do co-op battles and stuff. And this is all something that's going to be done online with your mobile phone. And it seems really cool. I'm really, really excited for this. Currently, they have five factions announced. You've got the Alliance, where you're going to have like Tyrion Forgering, Maiev, Shadow Song, Jaina Proudmoore as kind of the heroes for them. The Horde are going to, it's kind of awesome, they're going to have Grommash Hellscream, which I love. Sneed, who, if you're familiar, all the way from, oh gosh, what was the zone that was just to the west, northwest of Barrens. Oh, I hate myself for forgetting this. Years of Warcraft knowledge lost. He's a goblin and a shredder, basically. If that makes sense, good. If not, I apologize. And then you got Karen Bloodhoof, who's dead right now, but kind of cool to see them back. You've got the beasts, which are going to have a couple. Hawker being one of the main ones. I understand. If you don't know Warcraft, this probably sounds completely dumb to you. and you're hearing names and it makes no sense. But I'm going to put a link in the show notes. You should definitely go over and take a look at this. If anything, just to kind of check out the actual art style, because I love the art style. It's adorable. It looks like it's a game that is made as a game, and it's not trying to sell you on anything outside of just being a fun game. And I love that. I love that they're doing that, because it's something that so many companies seem like they are trying to find the next big Fortnite. And it's like, maybe just make a game you like. Maybe just make a game that you're passionate about and is going to be fun. You've got BlackRock, which has got Ren Blackhand in general, Drakensith, if I remember that's how that's pronounced. I love it. It's awesome. It's orcs with dragons. Who doesn't love orcs with dragons? And then, of course, the undead, which have Blood Mage Thalnos, which is, it's all right. But then Baron Rivendare, I'm so excited for him. It's so stupid. He looks great. But I love this. I love the idea that they're doing something that is familiar to me as far as like a Clash game, but I've never played a Clash game, and I'm looking forward to this because I think Blizzard does something which is really great. They're able to take a look at what is fun and interesting, and then take the Warcraft or Starcraft or, you know, the different IPs that they have, Diablo, for example, and they'll be able to take that gameplay, that game mode, and basically kind of put their own spin on it. They're really good at doing that. They've always been really good at doing that. It's when they venture out and do weird stuff that it kind of calls into question, like, do you know what you're doing? Because it doesn't feel like you know what you're doing. But in this case, I feel like they know what they're doing. And it doesn't seem like this is one of those things where they're trying to fool anyone on what type of game this is. This is very clearly a game that is made by fans, and I'm definitely going to be a little biased on this because I know the people that are making it. They're fans of the games like it. And as a result, if you like the games that are kind of like Tower Defense or Clash Royale or Clash of Clans, there's a good chance that you'll be able to dive into this and have some fun with it as well too. Not going to be for everyone, but I think if you like those games, you're going to have a lot of fun with this one. All right. So I the shilling is out of the way. I apologize. I should have put that in the news because it was a lot more of a news story, and it just kind of popped in my head last minute, and I forgot that I wanted to talk about that because it was just something that I'm excited for. I'm glad to see my friends having fun with a game and getting to actually announce it. It's such a cool thing. They've been holding on to this for so long and doing such a good job of keeping people in the dark about it that I'm just really glad that they got a chance to kind of showcase it. And aside from the obvious people being like, oh, it's a mobile game, I'm a real gamer, most of the people that I've seen talking about this has been really good. So I'm glad about that. All right, so let's get into some of the games that are coming out this month for the Xbox Game Pass. So Trek to Yomai is something that is a lot of publicity has been around. And so far, a lot of people are saying that it's pretty good if you're a fan of Kurosawa films. This is one of an independent film that is an action-adventure game, takes inspiration from Kurosawa. It is releasing on May 5th and should be interesting to see how people like it. It seems like the story is the thing that's the most interesting in this case. One game that's also available now is called Loot River. This is a top-down of procedurally generated dungeon crawler that is tagged as a Souls-like with real-time combat with spatial block shifting. The idea is interesting, but man, I am just kind of over a lot of these indies that are the procedurally generated dungeon crawlers, especially the ones that are Souls-like or roguelikes. They gotta come up with a different type of game, man. There's a few out there that have really done a good job of being indies that are unique and really stand out, and everything else just seems to be something that everyone is just kind of putting together for the sake of putting together. Like the gameplay is the draw, but to be perfectly honest, the gameplay is not the problem. It's the narrative that is tied to the gameplay. Like if you can make a game that has really good narrative and exceptional gameplay, then you're set, you're good. But Most of these indies always feels like it is one or the other. It either has all narrative and no gameplay, or it has all gameplay and no narrative. Hades is a perfect example of really good balance between those. I don't know if you guys will like this. You might, but it's available on Game Pass, so you don't have to really worry too much about that. We've also got a bunch of other games that are coming out on Game Pass, both for PC and console. I still recommend Hardspace Shipbreaker for PC. It's coming out on May 24th. It's just a fun, relaxing game. Sniper Elite 5 is coming May 26th. Pac-Man Museum Plus is coming to console and PC on May 27th. There were a bunch of Star Wars games, thanks to May the 4th celebration, that went on sale this week. So hopefully you guys got a chance to go take a look at those. They're pretty much everywhere, whether they're the official stores or retail stores. Online, doesn't matter. If you were interested in Star Wars, now was the time to be buying that stuff, because it was about as cheap as it could possibly get. Funny enough, PlayStation actually managed to get Elden Ring for $50 at a couple retailers, which was kind of surprising, but I'm pretty sure most people that wanted that game probably already have it, or can hold out a little bit longer for a better deal. I would probably recommend somewhere around $40. I'm still very tempted to see how that game goes. It seems like one of those games that I could have a good time with. So outside of that, looking forward to seeing what comes with next week as we get closer and closer towards that June time frame when Summer Games Fest, Xbox and Bethesda, Nintendo certain to do something. There's some rumors about PlayStation doing a Sony kind of presentation, one of their showcases soon in the future. So we'll have to see. With that, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Xbox Wrap-Up. Thank you to everyone who is listening. It means the world to me. I love kind of talking about these things and keeping you, as well as myself, up to date as we kind of see what goes on in each week for gaming news. It's kind of awesome just to kind of see what's going on. I still am really surprised at the lack of controversy between Embracer Group purchasing these three studios from Square Enix and Xbox acquiring Activision Blizzard. It's a much bigger deal comparative, but like the general rhetoric was that acquisitions are bad for the industry. So many people were talking about that, and it feels like that's something that is not happening with this specific thing. And I feel like it really does kind of come down to Xbox, and maybe that's just my personal bias, but that's kind of how I feel. With that, thank you to everyone for joining in this week. We'll be back next week for another episode of the Xbox Wrap-Up. If you have any questions, concerns, feel free to let us know over at the Xbox Wrap-Up at gmail.com or the Xbox Wrap-Up pod on Twitter, and I will have the way to kind of check that on my own and just see if anything comes through. Otherwise, just continue to keep listening, and we'll keep having fun with gaming.